Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Monergy Life. This is your host, Robert Fisher. I have the great pleasure of welcoming Helen Kramer to the show tonight. Helen is an emotional education expert, and I, for one, can't wait to hear more about what that really entails. She's a licensed New York State psychoanalyst and has been implementing a very interesting system for a more rapid form of emotional change than psychoanalysts normally cultivate in the personal change system, PCS for short. And I have to say that this topic is very dear to my heart because I have come to believe that emotional health translates into every other kind of health. And the source of a lot of people's problems are emotional. Now, here's Helen calling in. We're going to bring her on the air. Helen, is that you?
Yes, it is.
Welcome to Monergy Life. Good evening.
Good evening to you and your listeners as well.
I was just introducing you to the listeners and telling everybody that from my point of view, emotional health is one of the most important things that we can cultivate, especially in these challenging times, because when people are not balanced emotionally, not only do they have the obvious stress symptoms, but I really have come to believe, and I like your opinion on this, Helen, that I believe that 99% of physical ailments have a really strong emotional basis to them. So that if one can cultivate emotional health, one can theoretically live a much healthier life physically. What's your take on that?
Oh, absolutely. We know that stress, if it doesn't cause illness, it certainly exacerbates it. And the kind of emotional reaction we have to situations can either be one of fulfillment, joy, competence, or it can be one of fear, depression, and all of those kinds of emotions cause stress. Whereas the more positive ones are ones that are conducive for healing.
Right. And, you know, what I see is the great challenge, and I'm sure you have your work cut out for you in terms of trying to encourage people to change their emotional response to life's events. But, you know, the way most people are conditioned to react is in a very defensive, ego-based mode, which cultivates an emotional reactivity, so to speak. And from my point of view, trying to develop an emotional neutrality to the events in your life cultivates such peace of mind, such balance, and such overall feelings of well-being.
Well, neutrality is the key. And let me give you a little history of how I went from doing psychotherapy to what I call brain rewiring and emotional education. And what happened with me is that after my training as a psychotherapist and going into my own practice, I worked with people, and I felt that everything that I had learned did not explain what I was seeing. And in traditional psychology and psychiatry, there's what I call the pathological model. There's neurosis, there's, you know, obsessive-compulsive disorder, whatever. And I believed that everything that was happening was happening because of the way a particular person's brain was working. But what I saw in everybody I worked with is that when they were stressed, that's when you would see what people might call ineffective behavior or childlike behavior. And I didn't know a lot about the brain at that point, but I hypothesized that the brain was misreading stress as danger, and it was sending the signal into the part of the brain that's really reserved for life and death situations, fight, flight, or freeze. And for most of our time on the planet, man lived in mortal danger, so having a quick fight, flight, or freeze response was what's allowed our species to survive, and all animals have that quick response. So what I felt was happening in traditional psychotherapy was that when people saw that therapists would see this behavior, they knew it looked childlike, so they would spend a lot of time talking about childhood, when in reality, what I developed was a system for teaching people when they have that melodramatic response, and that can be, you know, overly anxious, overly rigid. Some people use magical thinking, which is really a way of covering up a fear response, that I could teach them how to shift that signal from the fight, flight, or freeze part of the brain, which has no cognition, no memory, no ability to see consequences, no ability to plan, no ability to be neutral. So, and fortunately, I wrote a book about the work, and while I was writing the proposal for my book, somebody sent me an article from the Wall Street Journal, and a leading neurobiologist, Joseph Ledoux, had actually proven that the theory I had was correct, and what he said was that people needed a separate system for transforming that reflex, and that was exactly what my work at that point was about, and that's what my book was about. So I started working on what I call brain rewiring in the late 80s, and have, now that we have technology that allows us to live image the brain, we can actually see what's going on and where there may be glitches in somebody's brain that makes them have obsessive compulsive thoughts or depression or addiction, and develop techniques for people to use here and now in the moment, every day, to rewire their brain.
Okay, now first off, I'd like to know what the name of your book was for the listeners.
Okay. The name of my book is Liberating the Adult Within.
Okay, and brain rewiring, that sounds awfully ominous when you first hear it. To me, it sounds almost like doing some type of lobotomy, but it's not an actual...
No. It's you see, when I wrote my book, the prevalent thinking was that the brain was fixed by age 7. Now, I would recommend a book to you and your readers called The Brain That Changes Itself. Now we know what I was intuiting, that the brain can change in form and function forever. And by the kind of work that I do with hooking people into their body and their feelings and creating mantras and visualizations, we can actually change how our brain works. Give you a very simple example. If they study the brain of a pianist, they can see the part of the brain that is involved with controlling finger movement is bigger for the pianist. But if you spend a certain amount of time a day thinking about playing the piano and you never played the piano, that part of your brain would grow larger as well, which means that the thoughts that we have, the visualizations that we have, are actually creating new neurotransmitters, new neural pathways, and changing the shape of our brain.
Well, you know, it could very well be. This is a hypothesis that I've sort of been looking at over the last 6 months, called the holographic theory of existence. I don't know if you're familiar with that. But
no, I'm not.
You're not. Basically, it's the concept that we create our own three-dimensional reality by our thought process. In other words, our physical reality, what we consider our reality, is 100% created by our thoughts. And this is very complementary to what you're suggesting. And,
right.
You know, I really believe that all the evidence is pushing us in that direction, that our thoughts are projections for ourselves, actually create our reality, as well as changes in the neural functioning of the brain.
Our thoughts and our feelings. And see, the interesting part for me is that the brain is designed to conserve energy, and that means that it will repeat same old patterns over and over again. And what I'm doing in my work is, in a way, like morphing the brain slowly into new patterns. Because you know, when they talk about, let's say, somebody yo-yos when they lose weight, well, what's actually happening in many people is that if somebody was 300 pounds for many years and they go down to 200 pounds, the brain thinks that they're starving and goes into survival mode and will actually put out chemicals that cause you to feel like you're going to die if you don't eat, that you're starving. So the brain is built for homeostasis, and that will go with changing any pattern. And so the techniques I use slowly move the brain into new patterns, and then I give people, as I say, I make tapes for them, I give them mantras, I give them visualizations to start to establish these new neural pathways and to work with people without medication to produce their own dopamine and their own serotonin, so that they can have all the benefits of medication without the side effects.
Right.
And know
I,
how to.
Yeah, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No, and feel empowered because they know how to do it themselves.
Absolutely, and I think increasingly people are beginning to realize that meditation, yoga, chanting accesses a different part of one's being, which not only causes changes to the neural functioning of the brain, but opens up a whole new way of experiencing events, a non-reactive way, a neutral way, a way that in effect bypasses a lot of the unproductive conditioning that most people have growing up.
Right. It's all about conditioning. It's not only about if your family was dysfunctional, your whole culture is dysfunctional because everybody's coming from this fight, flight, or freeze part of the brain.
Right. And not only that, besides the fact that most people are reactive emotionally to the events in their life, most people also in a culture such as ours are doing things to uplift the ego, and which is an artificial construct. So when you're operating from the ego and you constantly need to feed your ego, you're going to be taking actions, you're going to be having thoughts and feelings that are really self-destructive ultimately, and will never bring you contentment and happiness because you're always going to be in this mode. The ego is never satisfied with what you have because no matter what you achieve, if you're ego-based, there's always somebody that's going to have more or has better achievement. So if you're constantly comparing yourself to other people, their achievements, the amount of money they have, et cetera, which our society cultivates with its celebrity worship, as you know. So if you're hooked into that way of thinking, until you get out of that mode also, you're never going to be able to be non-reactive to life's events.
Right. And you see, I mean, again, this is so much conditioning because we're conditioned to feel that the only way we can be worthy, slash lovable, is if we're rich or beautiful or, you know, whatever, all these things that create this false ego and actually a loss of self, because it pulls us out of ourselves. It makes us incredibly judgmental of ourselves and others. It moves us away from our true nature, because recently what's been discovered is that we actually have neurons in our brain that make us empathic, that we actually have parts of the brain that allow us to resonate with other people so that we can have the experience of getting them and being gotten. But when we have all this conditioning, those natural built-in ways of connecting are not being used, so that we're losing the ability to be empathic with one another and to really get each other on a deep level. We have all the structures for doing that, but our conditioning is pulling us away from it.
Well, not only that, but a lot of the messages that people receive on a daily basis from the media pull people away from that type of empathy. If anything, people have this very disconcerting attraction to other people's misfortunes, which is not empathy, if you know what I mean.
No, it's a way of making yourself feel better because somebody
right.
else is feeling worse.
Right, and
but,
the Germans
and that,
have this
and that,
great
again,
word.
That's what,
the Germans have this great word for that. I'm trying to access it. It's called Schadenfreude, and it's a German word which means taking pleasure in other people's misfortunes. And you know, it's the reason that people are fascinated by train wrecks, metaphorically and actual, because it somehow makes them feel, okay, I missed it this time, you know, and they can feel superior to the people that were in the wrecks. But it doesn't engender true empathy, that's for sure.
Because it's all based on judgment.
Right.
Who's better, who's worse. And then not being able to connect to our own essence, being allowed to connect to our own essence and the essence of others. And it's very interesting, because there are a lot of people that believe that the heart has a brain, and actually the heart has more electrical energy and higher frequency than the brain in our head.
Is that right?
And yeah.
Interesting. So are you saying that the heart operates at a higher vibrational frequency?
Yeah.
And you know, increasingly both scientists and other so-called experts have come to the conclusion that everything is based on energy and vibration. Everything has a vibration. And, you know, I'm very aware of that because, as you know, Helen, I wrote a book about energy, and I've been studying it for a while. And, you know, even when you meet somebody or come into a restaurant at someone's house, people who are not even aware of this stuff will say, hey, I like that person's vibe, or I like the vibe of this place.
Right.
And they're really picking up on the vibrational frequency of the place they're at or the person they're around. And I think when people are in a relationship and the relationship goes south, it's not anybody's fault. It's just people stop vibrating on the same level. Literally, they're not on the same wavelength. Literally, their vibration of their body, their minds, their hearts changes, and they no longer are in sync, and it's all due to the vibration of the other person.
Well, you know, there's actually something called attractor neurons that were just recently discovered that are formed in our brains in childhood, and unfortunately, they are formed by our relationship with our parents, and often. So our brains are actually reading other people's brains that are like what we're used to and saying, that's the person for me. And the problem that I see with people, and I have a workshop I'm doing next week on the art of creating positive relationships, is
mm-hmm.
that people are not given the tools for dealing with differences, conflicts, how how to invite intimacy in your life. How do you communicate with another human being that invites a positive or an intimate response? And so along with the brain rewiring, I teach a lot of communication skills because I find that most people come together for because there's a basis for loving one another, and then when nature plays a trick on us, which it gives us lots of endorphins and dopamine and all kinds of feel-good chemicals so that we will fall in love and procreate, and then those feel-good chemicals wane, they're short-lived, and then we don't have the tools to maintain intimacy without the chemicals. And so most people had a very passionate falling in love stage, and they don't know how to go to the next stage where they're building on the communication, and they're not looking for affirmation. And most people didn't get enough affirmation early in life, and then our society seduces us into thinking we have the do-over in romantic love, and because of all the feel-good chemicals that we get in the beginning, we feel like we had that do-over, and then those chemicals leave and we're back to not feeling good about ourselves. And not only don't we feel good about ourselves, but most people are conditioned to expect rejection, and then they look at things like differences as rejections, and without realizing it, they make it a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Absolutely, because what you project becomes real.
That's right.
And your thoughts, and very often people have such a negative internal dialogue about themselves. And I think it's a really worthy thing to even stand in front of the mirror and start talking to yourself in a loving way and in an affirmative way, that you're worthwhile, that you're entitled to love, that you're worthy of love, that you're a great person, to counter all the negative chatter that goes on in the mind during the day.
Yes, I work with that with people a lot because most people have the constant negative self-talk and they're almost immune to it. And I'll say to somebody, you know, do you have a child in your life that, you know, a niece, is, you know, or one of your own children? Would you say that to that child? And they're horrified. Would you say
right.
that those things to your best friend? But when they say it to themselves, they don't even recognize how destructive it is.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
So
and people are often the most unkind to themselves.
Right. And then they expect other people to treat them the same way. So they misinterpret other people's behavior through that lens of the criticism and rejection.
Absolutely.
So
and
I work.
You work to try to reverse that negative internal dialogue, I'm sure.
Right.
And that's such a worthy thing to do because that is so destructive for people.
If you can't change that, you can't have a good relationship with anybody.
Well, you know, it's sort of a trite thing to say, but until you learn how to love yourself, but really, really love yourself, and I'm not talking about in a self-indulgent, hedonistic way necessarily, but to really love who you are, your essence, the fact that you're a human being on this planet, embodied in the physical form, which is only temporary, as we all know, until you come to that realization, it's really, really hard to love another human being.
Well, or to let them love you, even though you're, and so I work with my clients in a very intimate way, and I let them internalize the support and the love and compassion that I give them, and then I use their friendships, because what's happened is, when we didn't get it as children, we learned to keep out. We don't want the criticism. We don't want the rejection. We don't want being ignored. So we keep out. And then when we have people in our lives that treat us differently, we haven't developed what I call the receptive response. We don't know how to take in. So if I ask somebody, if they have good friends, and they'll say yes, and I'll say, can you remember something nice that happened with you and a friend? And they'll say, yeah. And I'll say, how does that make you feel? And they'll say, good. And I know they're not in their body at all. They're thinking it's a good thing, but they haven't learned how to take in. So what I work with them is taking in from me and taking in from friends, where you really feel a warmth in your chest. You feel an openness in your breathing. If you don't feel what's happening, it isn't affecting you. It isn't really
right.
happening.
Right.
It's a thought, and that won't change anything.
Yeah. When you said that, there's something that a thought that I had. And, you know, what I find in terms of people's behavior, here again, I'm about to generalize. It doesn't apply to everybody. But you, Helen, really have your work cut out for you because, and I think you'll agree with me with what I'm about to say, but I'm curious to know if you'll agree with me, so I'll spit it out, is that today, good luck finding people who can honestly and sincerely show love and compassion to another human being. So people who are not accustomed to it, who you want to condition to get accustomed to feeling that thing in their chest and their heart, it's a real challenge to find people who know how to even give that today. So it's doubly challenging. People have to undo the conditioning that tells them they're not entitled or not worthy enough to love, and they have to find a source of love that's pure enough to trigger the kind of feelings you're talking about.
Right. Well, I find that, that when you're open to it, you find it.
Very true. But I think it's a harder thing to find today when people – from my point of view, people are very self-interested today in our society. And there are very few people, I think, who even know how to give love unconditionally without expectation of receiving something in return. Yeah, those people exist. I'm just saying that I don't think it's so easy to find, even if you are open to it.
I work... And I tell my clients, and when I do workshops and groups, that we need to be counterculture. That we need to relate with our heart values and not with the conditioned values that are in no way allowing us to reach our full potential.
Well, absolutely, and in fact, a lot of people believe that right now the consciousness of the world is changing from being centered in your head to being centered in your heart. And when you're centered in your heart, you are more open to, genuine, authentic human experiences and human connection. So that's the shift that's going on all around the world, actually. There is a lot of evidence to that, and that will bring you to a higher level of consciousness when you are more centered in your heart, when you operate from the point of view what feels right as opposed to thinking about everything too much. So, the process is to get out of your own way, to get out of your head, and to start feeling more.
Right, absolutely.
And that's definitely counter to this culture, that's for sure.
Right, because this culture is constantly running on fear.
And judgment. Fear and judgment. And everyone is surveyed and evaluated at every juncture to see how they're doing in comparison with other people. So it doesn't really permit that. You have to give yourself permission to operate more from the heart. That's the real challenge, I think, in what you're doing too, to give people the confidence and the security to feel that they can operate from the standpoint of their heart. Now, the time has flown, Helen. In the last 60 seconds, tell our listeners how they might get in contact with you. I know your website is listed on the episode. What's the best way to get in touch with you if they want to take one of your workshops?
They can email me at helen@pcs100.com or
okay.
And another REALSOL, it's short for Real Solutions, the number 1 at AOL.com, and
perfect.
I'd be happy to answer any emails and open up a dialogue.
Perfect. Well, listen, this half hour has just flown by for me. I'm totally fascinated by the subject. I can speak for an hour, but I want to thank you, Helen Kramer, for being on the show. She's an advocate of personal change system, and our listeners know how to get in touch with her. Helen, thank you so much for being on Munnergy Life. It's been a real pleasure to have you on the show.
And my pleasure as well.
Good night, everybody. Good night, Helen.
Good night.